This is the British Broadcasting Corporation. We present London Forum, a weekly program in which we bring to the microphone prominent personalities to discuss important topics of the day. Here is John Connell to introduce the speakers.
This is John Connell introducing this week's London Forum. Our subject we're talking about this week is the role of the press. And as we're talking mainly about the United Kingdom press and the press of the United States, we've got here four very distinguished journalists, two Americans and two British. Going on from my left, Mr. Raymond Daniel, chief of the London Bureau of the New York Times. He's been there for 11 years. Mr. Francis Williams, who was editor of the Daily Herald for 4 years, and for three very eventful years was the Prime Minister's advisor on public relations. Mr. Frederick Koo, who's the London correspondent of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Mr. Alan Pitt Robbins, who's news editor of the London Times, and just the other day, he was a British delegate to the 7th Imperial Press Conference, which was held in Canada. Well, let's go straight away, the four contestants, on this subject. Raymond Daniel, what's your view, really, on the role of the press and the responsibility of it today?
Well, I would say, before answering that, that I'd like to confine it to the role of the press in a democracy. And I think, with that limitation, we can say that the role of the press is to inform the public of what's going on within the democracy, and insofar as it's able to guide the opinion of the people in a proper direction.
Mr. Williams?
Yes, I think that's so, though I often wonder whether we're not still having a hangover from the past, and that the press tends to think of itself as a guide, philosopher and friend to the great reading public, whereas large sections of the great reading public think of it primarily as an entertainer. I myself think that's a probably inevitable development, although one to be regretted from the point of view of the journalist. And I think the real problem of the press in a democratic society is to find a way of entertaining while at the same time preserving its original and in many ways greater role of guiding and instructing and helping the public to form sensible opinions on national and international matters of importance.
Let's carry this on a bit. Frederick Koo, your idea.
Well, I should say that the press fulfills three functions, or should fulfill them, to tell the truth, to be informative, and to supply entertainment. I think that in the highly competitive world in which we live, the third function, the entertaining aspect, often tends to eclipse the two others. And I think that the best newspapers are those which provide a balance between the three.
Well, Mr. Pitt Robbins?
I agree entirely with that. And I would say that there are, equally, there are three functions: to inform, to educate, and to amuse. And I don't think that the amusement is the least important of the three. I think if you can retain the balance between those three, you're producing a good newspaper.
Well, are we thinking now of the role of the press, or possibly the role of the journalist? And are we thinking of the press, I wonder, as you four gentlemen journalists see it, or as the public sees it?
Well, that was really the distinction that I was trying to make. I think it is quite clear that with the development of popular education over the last quarter of a century or so, that a large proportion of the new reading public does, in fact, buy its newspaper primarily as an entertainment. It forms its political opinions by other means, as is shown, I think, both by the experience of the presidential elections in the United States and by the experience of our political elections here. That may be because in national affairs, the public feels that it does have other means to form its opinion. And it may well be that in international affairs, the public takes its opinions much more, and perhaps sometimes dangerously so, from the press.
Mr. Robbins?
I think we are, as journalists, are rather inclined to overestimate the effect we have on the public. I think they don't take us quite as seriously as we take ourselves. but I think they can be almost unconsciously educated if they're handled the right way.
Have you any views on education, Mr. Daniel?
Well, I was going to say that I think while it's true that the public pays less and less attention to editorial comment in political affairs, that they are guided very, very much by their day-to-day reading of the news that's presented in the news columns. I remember President Roosevelt once said that he didn't mind how much his words were distorted in the editorial page, provided they were printed honestly in the news columns.
Is news printed honestly? What's your view, Cole?
Well, I think it's impossible to answer yes or no to that. I think that the overwhelming majority of journalists, as well as editors, try to print it honestly. I think there is a tendency, especially during heated political periods, occasionally to slant news. You see it particularly during election campaigns. And it's not so much a question of distortion as emphasis, because it's a very simple matter to give great prominence and abnormal amount of space to a candidate with whom your paper is in sympathy, and to subordinate a speech by his rival.
I think it's only fair to say that the restriction on newsprint has made the problem of fair reporting even more difficult than ever, because you cannot always maintain the balance. But I think we do try to give a fair representation to every side of a case. I think in our parliamentary debates, for instance, we try to give both government and opposition a good show, and I should always insist with my reporters that they must bring out both sides of the case, and particularly in the police court case, both the prosecution and the defence.
Mr. Williamson?
You see, the problem does seem to me to arise from this. The function of the press is undoubtedly to hold up a mirror to the world, to report what happens, some of which is important, some of which is only of fleeting and transitory importance, but of considerable interest. And insofar as it's necessary, to interpret those events and try and put them in their perspective for the ordinary reader. But newspapers do exist as profit-making concerns. Even if they don't wish to make a profit, they must pay their way and be economically self-reliant. And it has been found by experience that those that wish to make large profits are on the whole more likely to do so if they lay greater stress on the entertainment side and the fleeting transitory side of news than on the serious news. And also, what is, I think, to some extent even more important and some ways more serious, that if in treating serious news, they endeavour to personalise it and dramatise it, to take what not the background of events, but the particular goings-on of one particular individual, because names make news and they make readership interest. And therefore that a great many readers of the ordinary popular press do in fact get a very distorted picture of what is happening in the world. A picture which is all foreground, and very largely personal foreground, without any of the background which, in fact, would put that foreground in its proper perspective.
I think that's very much a British statement of a British difficulty. Would either of the Americans here have any views on that?
Well, I would say that in every country there's a good and serious, responsible press, and in every country there's an irresponsible press. But surely the people can choose their papers, and I would say that it's better for a person to read a poor newspaper than not to read any at all, because I think in the evolutionary process of education, if he gets in the habit of reading a paper for entertainment, he's a prospective buyer of a serious paper for serious information.
I would say that it's not always a choice between serious news and amusement, but often a conflict between news of historic importance and local news, which is of such popular interest that it helps to sell papers. I remember a case in point which arose in this country last year in connection with alleged corruption in a government department or involving a government department.
for something like 6 weeks. That was the lead story in almost all the papers, including the serious ones. Although at the same time, communist armies in China were conquering the country and bringing about a situation of great historical importance, of which we're today feeling the repercussions.
That's a shrewd one, anyway. And it brings up a whole new field. Have you any views on that, Mr. Robbins?
No, I don't think so, because I think you must give a great attention to a case like the one Mr. Kuh refers to, which was a direct a reflection on the air civil service. It attracted enormous interest because once you raise any question of corruption, the whole, I should say, of the British reading public is interested. And I think, therefore, that must come first. And I have no regret for having published 4 or 5 columns a day of those proceedings.
May I just say one word in reply? I was not suggesting for one moment that that case should have been neglected. I was referring to the proportionate attention that was given to it. And as Robbins says, as much as 5 and even 10 columns a day was given to this case of comparatively local interest, however great its local importance. Whereas day after day you could look in vain for any reference whatever, even for 2 lines in the papers, about events in China.
I'd like, if I may, to take up a point that Daniels made when he said that any reader of a newspaper, however flippant and so on it was a potential reader of a serious newspaper. And that's the sort of thing that I think any serious journalist likes to believe, but I'm not sure that facts bear it out at all. I think many of us believe that just as the in this country, in Britain, the beginning of elementary school education led to the big development of the popular press, so the extension of secondary school education would lead to an increased readership for the serious press, or at any rate for the medium serious press. On the contrary, what we have seen is that the papers which have the largest circulations in Britain at the present time are much more flippant and sensational than any papers which existed in the early days of popular journalism, and that it is that which brings the big commercial rewards. And I wonder what is the solution of the problem. Quite clearly, the kind of serious treatment of serious news, which is proper to the Times, whether it be the Times of New York or the Times of London, is unlikely to appeal to a very large section of the public, which is not deeply politically interested all the time, to the extent that readers of those papers may be. Whether we have not to devote ourselves to seeing whether it is not possible to evolve a new technique of dealing with serious affairs, not solemnly, brightly and with interest, but still much more objectively than in many cases they are. And that seems to me one of the big problems for the journalist of today.
Wouldn't that take us, I hope it would take us, into fields of organization as distinct from performance and function? And perhaps we could, for the listener, discuss for a moment or two the organization of our newspapers in both countries, the way in which our setup here is arranged, our national newspapers, which are the 12 big newspapers published here in London, and our local newspapers. Of course, it is different profoundly from the United States, isn't it, where I gather you have quite a different setup.
Very different. For geographical reasons, it's impossible to attain the degree of distribution in the United States that the London papers enjoy. Consequently, the metropolitan press of Chicago, New York, and the other large cities dominate their own territory, but do not circulate generally outside of that region. As a result, there are probably more large newspapers scattered through the United States proportionately than there would be in this country.